Good morning. Welcome to the Garden Conversation. And this morning, we are sitting on Lynn Canal on a deck looking at the Katzenhain and overlooking Nancy Berlin's garden. Thanks for inviting me.
Good morning.
Actually, you didn't invite me. I invited myself to come over to your garden.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks. And one of the reasons I wanted to come to your garden is because you have a pretty unique situation here. You are right on the shore. You've had to bring in soil. I mean, that's a constant happening for you, right? Because you're on rocks. We're literally looking at rocks.
Yeah, we're on rocks. But I haven't created any new beds in a long time. So this is soil that I've created over the years, adding lots of compost. And every time we've dug a hole for a foundation of one building or another, the dirt gets moved
in five gallon
bucket down here.
Wow. Let's talk about one of the things that I think is most interesting. It's not only soil that you brought in. What is the most recent addition to your garden beds?
Okay, well, this year we happened to have a mama moose with a calf that hung out here most of the winter. And also we saw a solitary, maybe a two-year-old, that was here a lot. And one day I was walking to the neighbors along our trail, and I noticed an awful lot of moose poop along the trail. And I really didn't think much of it, but this spring it was so cold for so long, and our garden beds were still frozen, and there was really nothing to do in the garden. And I thought, well, why don't I start packing over some of this moose poop and see maybe if I can get 25 gallons or so. So I started packing it over 5 gallons at a time, and I reached the 25-gallon mark, and I went, I wonder if there might be 50 gallons. And so I kept gathering, and the weather was still cold enough that I wasn't able to do much else in the garden.
This was midwinter?
No, it was April.
Oh,
actually.
Oh, it's spring.
Yeah.
Okay.
But still cold, you know. And so I reached the 50-gallon mark, and I thought, well, maybe I probably couldn't get 100, but maybe I could get 75. And, you know, the more I looked, the more I realized that other places that the moose went besides just the trail between our houses. And so they were along the beach fringe and stuff. And so I figured the area from which I collected was probably no larger than a couple football fields. So I surpassed 75, and I thought, well,
man,
if I can get 75, I'm going for 100. And after, you know, the weather started warming up, I did make it to 165 gallons.
165 gallons of moose poop. So Nancy talks to me at this point, and I say, well, you know, I don't think that moose poop can have much nutrition. And it was like, your bubble was burst. I've just carried all of this moose poop. And I said, but I don't really know that. And so she looks it up and gets information that actually moose poop, especially in the summer, right, has more nutritional value. In fact, it's pretty equal to other manure.
Correct.
And so it's a really valuable resource. But I'm not sure in the winter, the moose poop of the winter, which when they're just browsing willow or whatever they browse, would have less nutrition. But
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the carbon to nitrogen ratio in the winter is higher. Mm-hmm. I think, if I remember right, I think it was 40 to 1 for winter scat and 30 to 1 for summer scat. Mm-hmm.
But that's still great for compost.
Yeah.
You know,
it's actually kind of perfect.
It's perfect for compost, yeah.
Yeah.
So you had to expand. I'm looking at 3 compost bins now where you used to have 2 because you've had to accommodate this 165 pounds of moose poop.
Yeah, not pounds, gallons.
Or gallons.
So I have no idea how much it weighed. But,
man.
Yeah.
That might be frightening.
And so luckily, because we're sitting here on the shores of Lynn Canal, I do get a seaweed that washes in.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to mix it in with seaweed, and next spring, come back and talk to me, and I'll let you know how it composts.
I would say that's probably one of the only things that makes your gardening experience easier, is it's that you have easy access to seaweed.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about moose poop, but yeah.
Oh, well, that too.
Seaweed, yeah, it's a great gift.
Yeah.
Have here.
So, so we're looking at a lot of raised beds that you have created with soil, like you said, over the years. We just did a walkthrough, and there are a couple things that I want to talk about that you're doing that may be unique or different that we can learn from. I see a bunch of lettuce that has gone to seed.
Yes, it's Black Simpson, and it went to seed really early on me this year, and I have tried saving lettuce seed in the past without much luck because normally it goes to seed in September when it's so wet, and then it molds and you don't get seed from it. And so this year when it went to seed in early August, I thought, aha, I'm going to get seed.
Yeah.
And then August turned out to be very, very wet. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm going to get it or not. I guess it depends on what September brings.
How do you tell whether the seed is viable? Do you have any tricks for that?
Nope. Yeah. I just will plant it next year and see what
happens.
See what happens.
Because you've also saved some other seeds.
Correct. And I've saved dill seeds. That's my most recent new seed. I've saved nasturtium. Kale was my first experiment. I still have
some of your kale seed. That was very viable.
Yeah. And it lasts a long time.
Kale seed lasts a long time.
And instead of saving arugula seeds, I just let the plants go to seed and let the seed fall into the soil, and then I have plants coming up. And actually, that happens a lot with my kale, and then this year I'm trying that with mustard as well.
Okay. And another thing that we talked about as we went into your greenhouse, you have a small little greenhouse that is in front of... It must get battered by wind and
totally battered. Yeah.
And you also got limited sun because you're protected. That's not quite the right word. You don't get sun because you've got a mountain behind you and trees and everything. So, but this greenhouse has given you. You've got beautiful tomatoes in it that hopefully will ripen this year, and you've got cucumbers. And we had a conversation about pickling, and so you don't use cucumbers to pickle.
Correct, because I have a limited greenhouse space, and cucumbers, in my experience, grow good in the greenhouse, but not outside.
Mm-hmm.
And but zucchinis grow well outside, and they are very prolific. And so I just do zucchini pickles.
And they don't get mushy?
They're not quite as crisp as cucumbers.
Right.
However, mm-hmm. if you scoop out the mushy part,
mm-hmm. The inside.
Mm-hmm. And then you make your pickles. And I learned this trick from Seymour Katz's book.
Mm-hmm.
If you put in a cherry leaf.
Just one cherry leaf?
One cherry leaf per quart. Mm-hmm. It will make a firmer pickle. And I've noticed the difference between my pickles last year, which had the cherry leaf addition, and the year before, which didn't. And so he also says... you can put in grape leaves, which we don't have any access to. And I think he had three or four other things that work.
Mm-hmm.
But since cherries are, you know, so common in Haines, it was easy to get cherry leaves.
Right. So you just get and fresh or dried or just...
No, I mean you're making your pickles in the fall.
Right. So you just get a leaf off the...
Yeah. And so we have both sweet and sour cherries. And mm-hmm. they both worked.
Mm-hmm. So. Wow. And you put it in, like, when you... Just jar them, you know.
Right before the you put on the lid and you do the water bath. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So another thing, as we walk through the garden, it was interesting to say, wow, the zucchinis are doing really well this year, which I normally think of zucchinis as being a hot weather or a warm weather thing, and they are doing well in many people's gardens this year. Another thing that I noticed that in your garden as well as others is how well celery is doing.
Yeah.
And any tricks to that? Or
I've had my best celery ever, and I have celery growing in two adjacent beds. And one of the beds I had remade over, and the other one I didn't. And the bed that I remade is... amazing.
Right. They're right next to each
right
other.
Next
so,
to
you
each
know,
other.
There's yeah. all of the rest of the conditions, sun and water, everything is the
very
same.
Very similar. Mm-hmm. And so they really enjoyed that heat. And then, of course, I had to take the Rime off when that celery is growing in the same bed as the zucchini. And so when the zucchini was pushing through the barrier, the hoops, I had to take the Rime off. And but
was that like early July or when? Do you remember when
probably,
you took it off?
Probably mid-July, I would say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just, that extra boost of the extra heat made a lot of difference.
In the spring time.
Early summer. Yeah.
That's an interesting thing because I've always thought of celery as being pretty cold hardy. And a woman who is a longtime gardener in Sitka said that she doesn't put her celery out until quite late because she feels like it is not a cold tolerant. Mm-hmm. So this kind of proves that. Theory that it celery does like heat, and maybe that's why I've always gotten this spindly celery that doesn't do much. And although I've started growing red Ventura celery, and I like the taste of that better, because besides being spindly, it's been bitter, and so and I think moisture is a key, and that's why everybody's celery is got a leg up this year.
Right, we've had so much rain; it's really kept that wet, and I think it liked it a lot.
And celery is also a nutrition hog, and so they like to be in a place where they get good nutrition as well, which obviously your beds have nutrition in them and are happy. So you've got netting all over the place. What's that about?
Well, I guess from what I've been hearing, it's also a great porcupine year, and it's to try to discourage them from climbing up our fence, which is just made of chicken wire. And my theory is that if they kind of get tangled in it and maybe fall backwards a couple times, they might not try and get in as be as persistent as they can be. And so it may or may not work. I know I've had a porcupine visitor several times this summer, but it doesn't seem to have done so much damage that it, you know, they can really wipe you out if they have their mind to it.
Well, if nothing else, it slows them down, so they have to spend a bunch of time figuring out how to get in.
Or get untangled.
Or get untangled, yeah.
So it's been a great year for porcupines, slugs, and also I have vole and deer mouse issues. So gardening has always got some major challenges.
It does. You have to be pretty determined.
You do have to be determined.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other side of the moose poop issue is if they hang around in the winter and you have overwintering kale, kiss that goodbye.
Oh, so. So that's the trade-off, though. You get the moose poop from them.
I got the poop this year.
Maybe you could train them to just poop right in your compost pile so you wouldn't have to carry it.
Ooh, that would be a tough shot, but I don't know.
Well, as I look out there on the garden, I also see another success, which kind of defies my belief system that onions generally need a lot of heat. You've got beautiful onions out there. What variety is that?
I've got two kinds. This year I've got Ailsa Craig and Highlander. And the Ailsa Craigs are still growing, whereas the Highlanders have kind of flopped over, which is the signal to take
them
out. Yeah. And I've also had some of the Highlanders go to seed a little earlier. I've found that those two varieties do really well for me because I don't get a lot of sunlight during the growing season. So.
I'm guessing that one of the reasons that onions have done as well this year is they get a lot of moisture. Mm-hmm. And they onions particularly need moisture because their roots are so shallow. The roots don't go down very far. And so it's really easy to let that top level of soil not be wet on a normal year. So that's probably why they're looking so beautiful. So when they fall over, do you pull them out right away after they fall over, or what?
Pretty much. And you know, I know a lot of people keep the tops on when they're drying them out.
Yeah.
I cut the tops off about maybe an inch above, and I like to use the tops. I mean, they're green onions. And they still, you know, do the normal drying thing where they close up
and dry out. I've always wondered about that, so I'm glad that you ran the experiment. So and then do you take and use those green onion tops just fresh, or can you
I've dried them before, and I just really don't
they lose so much flavor that they really don't have much.
And our freezer space is better used with other things, so I don't put it in the freezer.
You got to pick and choose what you're going to what you're going to use them for. So okay, well, 15 minutes goes by really fast when
it's been very fun. Thank you.
Well, thanks for sharing all of this, and thanks for sharing this great spot. It's a wonderful place to garden. At least you can't complain about the view when you're gardening. All right. Well, thanks for letting me come to your garden. So this has been Mardell Gunn and Nancy Berlin with The Garden Conversation.